You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Speaker Gingrich, you recently said black Americans should demand jobs, not food stamps. You also said poor kids lack a strong work ethic and proposed having them work as janitors in their schools. Can't you see that this is viewed at a minimum as insulting to all Americans, but particularly to black Americans?
No, I don't see that.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Your friend, U.S. Senator John McCain, has said on Twitter that you could follow the fate of Muammar Gaddafi. Do you think it's an idle threat or a real plan by the West? Well, calling him a friend is probably an exaggeration. Although I have met Mr. McCain, I think it was at that memorable Munich security conference 4 years ago. Yes, I've seen that statement. What can I say? First, his words weren't meant for me, but for all of Russia. Some countries would want Russia to step aside, to get out of the way, and stop interfering in the ruling of the world. They're still afraid of our nuclear potential. That's why Russia is always in the spotlight. That's why it's a pain in the neck for many. We have an independent foreign policy, and I hope it stays this way in the future. Of course, that's not very convenient for some people. Second, the West is not monolithic, and we do have more friends than enemies. Third, Mr. McCain is known to have fought in Vietnam. I believe he has enough civilian blood on his hands. Is it that he can't live without such horrible, disgusting sights as the butchering Gaddafi? The whole world saw him being killed, all bloodied. Is that democracy? And who did it? Drones, including American ones, delivered a strike on his motorcade. Then commandos, who were not supposed to be there, brought in so-called opposition and militants, and killed him without trial. I'm not saying that Gaddafi didn't have to quit, but that should have been left up to the people of Libya to decide through the democratic process. It's a long and difficult way, but it's the only way to do it right. Mr. McCain was taken prisoner in Vietnam and was put not just in jail, but in a pit. He sat there for several years. Anyone would go nuts after that.
Internet radio for smarter than original.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from ang-newswire.blogspot.com. That is the new address, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And you have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, and neo-fascist control. I wish you all welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, shout out to the gods and earth, and peace to the original family in this time of strife and struggle. And for the black man and woman in the United States and in Africa, it is a time of strife and struggle. As you can see, the verbal war against black America has begun. You know, it was going to happen sooner or later. And we have to remember that Newt Gingrich is from Georgia. Now, I have relatives in Georgia. You know, I'm just saying, it is what it is. You know, I mean, the last time I saw a black lawn jockey, I'm not talking about one of these black GOP freaks. I'm not talking about one of these black Republicans, these so-called black conservatives. I'm talking about, you know, the inanimate gnome that you will see in those who miss the old South, right? You know, they just can't get over that the rebellion failed. They can't get over that. And it seems that the average white person in the United States can't get over it either. You know, we keep hearing that the South lost. No, they didn't. We keep hearing that the Nazis lost. No, they didn't. They simply moved over here. And we know that for a fact. Reinhard Gehlen was one of the first employees. He and his entire intelligence staff. Let me repeat that. Reinhard Gehlen, who was Nazi Germany's government, army, whatever the hell, you know, military intelligence for the Eastern Front. They were the ones that were the anti-Bolshevik disinformation, covert operations, what have you, black propaganda, all of that. You know, all of this stuff to, you know, work against Stalin. Well, to work against Russia in general, the whole idea of the Bolshevik Revolution, which Stalin did not represent. And let's make that clear. We know we're talking about Lenin and Trotsky. You know, we're talking about the Russian anarchists, perhaps. You know, we're talking about the workers' collectives. We're talking about the anarchist collectives, you know, in the 1917 revolution. 1916, 1917, depending on which scholar you want to speak to, when it started, when it actually ended, because none of them talk about how the capitalist nations invaded, came in over Archangel, and tried to overturn the Russian Revolution. You know, that's not discussed, right? The Soviet expedition to overturn the Russian Revolution is never discussed. It just isn't. You know, I mean, the United States has invaded Canada twice. Who discusses this? Now, Canadian students know this, of course. If you ask the average American, they don't know what you're talking about. And even if they find out, they'll probably be liable to do what Tennessee wants to do. Tennessee, what used to be Cherokee country before the death march to Oklahoma for our people, right? Hey, Oklahoma, you know, all of you who were, you know, behind kicking out the freedmen, otherwise known as the black Indians in your nation, you know, what about this? They want to take out all the references to the Trail of Tears. They want to remove all the references to African slavery. They want to remove all of the references to our being invaded, our being genocidally wiped out, you know, everything. You know, yeah, well, I say it like that because, you know, and that wasn't proper English, because none of this is proper anyway. But no, it's not proper English because I don't know how else to get this. You know, trying to discuss genocide with the average person in the United States is like pulling teeth. you know, you get the usual response, oh, it means to eradicate the gene pool, right? Well, that didn't happen, you're still here. You know, you always get some kind of crackpot, snide, smirking, kind of like Sean Hannity response to these sorts of questions. Or someone like Michael Medved, another conservative pundit out there, who flatly says that there was no Native American Holocaust because there were no Native Americans here. So, you know, Cahokia, that doesn't exist, right? You know, none of the mound cultures exist. The Sunni culture doesn't exist. Mayan, Incas, Aztecas, nah. Zotils, none of that. Taino, nothing. It was just empty space. This is the argument. So when you discuss genocide in the United States, you might as well be an Armenian dealing with Turkey. You might as well be an Irishman from Ulster dealing with someone who represents the Tory Party in the UK. It's the same as being someone who has a family who survived the rape of Nanjing in China, dealing with someone from Japan who says that it never happened. It's like being a Chamorro and being told that you don't exist. It's like being a Taino in Puerto Rico, in the Dominican Republic, and being told that you don't exist. It's like being a black man and woman in the United States and being told that you don't exist. And you know what? Your slavery never happened. We're not going to discuss it. And we're not going to discuss the fact that George Washington was a slave owner. We're not going to discuss that George Washington was not only a slave owner, he also took advantage of his slaves. And they were numerous. He and his brother both had numerous burrheads. Look it up. Black folks know what I'm talking about, especially if they're gullah. They know exactly what I'm talking about. Especially if they're gullah, they know exactly what I'm talking about. Because he owned gullah slaves. He and his brother owned gullah people. So, he died. When he died that winter night, supposedly from a fall, he was coming from the slave quarters. He was coming from the slave that he just finished using. I know you don't want to talk about that. I know that they don't, the Tea Party in Tennessee, the Republicans are in all over the country, the average white man and woman, period, does not want to talk about the fact that, you know, Thomas Jefferson was taking advantage of his slave. You know, we like to be polite and call her Sally Hemings. But, you know, the bottom line was he was taking advantage of his property. He owned her. She had no choice in the matter. She had no say in the matter. She was his property. And she bore him many children who he in turn enslaved. And I know it embarrasses white people in the United States and it gives you hemorrhoids, but I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. And the election of Barack Obama has completely flipped out the goddamn country. It has completely flipped out the average white person in the United States. And, you know, I don't want to hear anymore about, well, this isn't a racist country, that these are only a handful of people. Let's get a few things straight. First off, racism does not denote attitudes. Racism denotes a system. Race, if you need to hyphenate it, then do so. Ism. It is embarrassing when Americans do not understand the English language. Racism denotes a system, a paradigm of racial exclusion, racial hierarchy, and racial unearned, underline that, unearned racial privileges. Ethnic bigotry is an attitude problem. Well, I'm better than these people because you pick your arbitrary nonsense on why some white people, or most white people on the whole, if they really get deep down and ask themselves about their own attitudes and why this society is the way it is,
How could it be like this if it wasn't for the passivity of the majority of white people who live here? Where was the outcry? Yes, there were people who got upset. Yeah, there were white people who said, you know, that was really wrong and stupid of Gingrich to, you know, the food stamp president was really, you know, insensitive for him to say what he said to Juan Williams. You know, maybe it was a little red, but no, we're not going to go out into the streets and say, this is not what we stand for. This is not what this is about. The same month that they are supposedly celebrating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So the average white man and woman, and I don't, you know, listen to me carefully, is a coward. When it comes to the issue of race and the genocide of Native Americans, the average white person in this country is a coward and a hypocrite. Don't tell me about Tibet when you can't talk about the Native American situation right here. We are dying. The average lifespan in the black community in the United States is 28 years old for a black urban male. 28. Scientific American. Not me. Not some communist newspaper. Not some radical liberal conspiracy. Not me. Not Alex Jones. You know, not anybody that you want to throw up as, you know, to totally, you know, disavow what I'm saying. The scientific American says that the African in the United States, the African male in the United States, is the fastest disappearing ethnic group in the world. Number one in ethnic dissolution. I'm not talking about culture. That's been gone a long time ago. You beat it out of us. We don't know what our names are. We don't know what our languages are. We don't follow our religions anymore. We're scared to follow our religions. Matter of fact, in Africa, you've taught the morons that you've got to believe in your Bible to burn us. Where we used to live next to people who practice Islam, which we adopted to protect ourselves from Arab slavery, not because we believed in the religion, but because we couldn't stop the Arabs from coming in and taking our people. If you're going to talk about slavery, talk about all of it. The white man in America loves to blame the African slave traders who were selling African people into bondage. They don't say anything about the fact that the Portuguese got the idea of the trade from the Arabs. But before the Arab even got there, the Arab was already doing slave trade with the Northern Europeans who were enslaving Western and Southern Europeans. But see, that's never discussed, right? It's the same reason, well, one of the two reasons that they never discussed in this country the Treaty of Tripoli. Because one, it says that Christianity is not the religion of the United States, and it makes it very clear that Christianity and no other religion can speak for the United States. That the United States is not a religious country. Thomas Jefferson, despite the fact that he was a slave owner and a hypocrite when it came to his racial views about Native Americans and what he called the irremovable veil of blackness, even though he had a black mistress and kept her his whole, you know, I mean all of his days, took her with him to France. I mean, you know, he just couldn't be without his brown comfort, right? But he made it clear to the Arabs that they were dealing with, who were kidnapping and enslaving Eastern Europeans and the occasional white Americans that they caught, because there was tons of piracy going on out there, that look, we have no religious beef with you because we're not a religious country. We're just saying, you stop kidnapping our people and we won't bother you. And we can find another way to work things out. Now, the rabbit right here that is trying to impose their religion And that's exactly what they're trying to do. You know, they're blaming Islam for trying to force, you know, they say, oh, the Muslims are trying to force their religion on us, you know. And you have stupid states like Oklahoma. And I don't know what it is. I mean, Indian people, you know, my brothers and sisters in Oklahoma, what are you going to stand there and take this? You know, how much longer, do we have to remind you? You know, my family went to the goddamn boarding schools. Do we have to remind you what Christianity does to the mind? Do we have to remind you, folks in Oklahoma, my native brothers and sisters, do we have to remind you of what the church did to us and how they're using religion now to turn people against each other again? And how some of you suckers are going for this? Do we really, really, really have to get into this? I suppose we do. So, you know, while Oklahoma is passing an anti-Sharia law, even though no one that I've spoken to yet that has anything to do with Oklahoma says that there's any evidence of Muslims doing anything there, you know, it passes anyway, right? So, you know, we have all of this going on, and it's getting larger and larger and larger, and you have these insults to the African community, and the African community doesn't seem to be able to do anything about it. Other than, you know, complain to themselves, while they're more worried about what's happening in the entertainment and sports world and not paying attention to what's happening politically. And then tonight you have the State of the Union address. So the last time this happened, didn't somebody yell out and call him a liar? Yeah, so we can just imagine what's going to happen tonight with Gingrich calling him the most dangerous president that the United States have ever had without explaining what he meant by that. And you might have heard by now that there was somebody yelling while Gingrich was talking about stringing him up, and somebody saying, yeah, and that he didn't say anything about it. He didn't address it. Same thing happened with Rick Santorum. He was giving some speech somewhere, and some woman was calling the president a secret Muslim, and that he had this anti-white agenda. He didn't say anything. He just let it go on. And, you know, and here it is, Juan Williams has been punked twice in a week by Gingrich. And he hasn't defended himself either. And he's a conservative, and he's supposed to be one of them, right? And the black community, what is the black community doing about this? Absolutely nothing. You know, and I'm not talking about Oprah Winfrey and Tom Joyner, because, you know, they're gone. You know, I'm going to tell you right now, a simple, easy way to figure out whether or not you're dealing with an African who is conscious, you know, look at them. If they peroxide their hair, I don't care if they were born in deepest Zimbabwe. If they're applying lye to their hair and they're doing the skin bleach thing, and if they can't disassociate themselves from entertainers as representatives to some kind of grounding on what it is to be an African in the world right now, you know, You have to understand who you're dealing with, because that is how bad things are. You know, how much longer is this going to go on before they start to turn the ovens on, and then you're going to be just like the Jews were in Germany, saying to themselves, you know what, I'm really a German. They're not going to do anything. You know, this is just a lot of talk. It's just a few rabble rousers. It doesn't mean anything. You know, when Frederick Carter was found hanging from a tree down in Louisiana, only thefinalcall.com reported that story. Only the Final Call, the Nation of Islam's newspaper, reported the story of this young boy, which they said that he did it himself. He was special needs. He was separated from he was a relative that he helped, but he was special needs. They somehow got separated, and he found his relative hanging from a tree, and the local law enforcement said that he did this to himself. I heard there's been a change in the case, but it's hard for me to find information. I don't even know. I cannot find anything in the local media that's really talking about it. And only the Nation of Islam News, thefinalcall.com, reported on this. And then you have what Paul Pulvuka released, where you have these people that were shot during the Katrina crisis by local law enforcement. They burned a body to try to cover up the what they did. Democracy Now! Reported white people that, you know, doing Katrina again, who were shooting at random black folks who lived in the community, saying that they were intruders. Nothing happened behind this. No real investigation. No, I'm not talking about conspiracy theories. about what may or may not have happened to the levee down there. I'm talking about what has been documented. And the information is out here, nothing. And the African community still doesn't feel that they're under any kind of threat. Here you have another young girl, African girl, doesn't speak Spanish. She lies and gives a false name to the authorities because they pick her up for shoplifting. Because she's, you know, young, stupid, whatever, you know. Okay, fine. She made, you know, she goofed, whatever. You know, I'm not here to judge her. You know, she's, you know, too young to understand what the hell, obviously, she was doing. And gives them some false information, even though her fingerprints don't match, even though she doesn't speak Spanish, even though they should be able to culturally kind of figure out that this chick doesn't know a goddamn thing about Colombia. Well, they sent her out anyway. They kicked her out of the country and deported her anyway. They were so, you know, willing to get rid of any, you know, get rid of any Negro in any way, shape, or form, that they sent this, you know, this child out, and, you know, no one says anything. You know, they're blaming her for all of this. You know, I mean, of course, yes, she gave them false information, but at what point does a law officer understand that this kid is lying? Explain that to me. Does that make any sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense to me. This makes absolutely no sense unless you just have it in your mind that you really don't want black people in your country. So you'll do anything to get rid of them. And then we had the Tuskegee experiment. And then they want to know why black people are scared to go to the doctor. Why they're scared to get injections. Why they're scared to give blood. And that's just one case. How about how many Native American women here have been sterilized? Against their knowledge, against their will, even when they were told about it. Was anybody held accountable? No. And then in here you have, you know, the United States apologizing for a similar trial that was done to women, Indian women in Guatemala. What do you think was done to Taino women in Puerto Rico when they were testing the birth control pill and other sterilization methods? That is supposedly how they perfected on Native American women in Puerto Rico and on reservations here in the United States. The process for tying tubes. They did it to the native community first. Two whole generations of natives do not exist because of this. Did you hear about it? Did you hear about that in your American history class? Did you hear about that in your American history classes? About how Europeans have dealt with Native Americans in Tennessee because you want to remove the information about what happened from the textbooks, and this bit of information I just gave you isn't even in the textbooks because nobody wants to discuss that, even though it's a matter of the government record. When Senator Frank Church in the mid-70s held the Church Intelligence Committee hearings, and they found out that everything we're complaining about now with the NDAA and SOPA and PIPA and ATNA and, you know, all of these acronyms. Everything's a goddamn acronym now. You know, that everything we're complaining about right now, they've been doing anyway. The Church Commission proved this, that they've been doing this anyway, and people have been framed, and people have been eliminated, and organizations have been badjacketed and prevented, you know, like the black community has been prevented from getting on our own feet. The Indian community has been prevented from standing on our own feet so that people like Generous can turn around and say that we're lazy and that, you know, the only way for us to have to deal with anything is to have a broom or a mop in our goddamn hands. And Santorum, who doesn't believe that women should be president because God doesn't want it. These are not just crackpots, these are fascists. And people are starting to realize just how megalomaniac, I mean, you know, the megalomania that's going on in Newt Gingrich's mind. They're starting to realize that he really does want to be king. He wants to be Führer. If he has it his way, it would be his way, and that's it. And if you don't see this, you're a fool. So go ahead and watch the State of the Union address tonight. But I mean, you know, I told you this was coming. Many of us have been telling you that this has been coming. This has been on the drawing board for many, many years. The business plot, which involved, you know, very important family in this country. Well, actually, a couple of very important families in this country. They liked what Hitler and Mussolini were doing so much, and they thought that Franco had the right idea, right? You know, they didn't understand the Carlist thing, you know, but you know, they figured that Franco had something going on, right? So, you know, they wanted fascism in the United States, and they looked at Smedley Butler and a couple other people that they thought were complete, you know, complete fools, complete opportunists that are willing to be like Scott Walker, who, if you remember when he got punked on the phone during the Wisconsin labor crisis, thought he was talking to one of the Koch brothers. You know, their father founded the John Birch Society. John Birch was a missionary who became an intelligence agent who was doing his best to crash communism in China. Couldn't stand Mao, couldn't stand anything that was going on that didn't, you know, support the idea of foreign control over Chinese society. So, you know, they have been the intellectual wing of the white supremacist movement in the United States for a very long time. So this is the Koch brothers. And obviously he thought that he was talking to one of them, and it turned out to be some left-wing activist, I don't know, what do you want to call him? He ran this the scam on him. And, you know, taking into account what's happened with Akon and everything, you know, it was going to happen sooner or later, and they got him. And it didn't seem to damage him when he admitted that he was looking for ways to frame and to backjack it, to use, you know, bad propaganda to make the people, the labor movement out front that was trying to stop him from selling their lives away, that he was willing to do whatever they wanted to do, but you're still willing to support him. You're still willing to support his rights. You know, Gingrich talking about, I'm not going to go to the debate tonight in Florida if they don't allow people to clap. Because if he has to deal on facts, he can't do anything. So he has to deal with populism. You know, I mean, look, I expect the Roman salutes to show up anytime soon. It's coming. It's coming. I mean, you know, Ron Paul has been caught out there standing in front of a Confederate flag talking about that the South was right, and he wants to run for president, right? So, yeah, and Gingrich wants to put Palin on somehow when her and her husband support the separatist movement. So, you know, this is what you're dealing with. And the only way you cannot know this is if you're not looking. Now, of course, Fox is going to report this, you know, because the Australian and the Saudi Arabian Muslim prince that owns Fox, they're not going to report anything that could bring light or shed light on these issues. You know, I mean, Murdoch's now trying to buy up the media in Turkey. Do you understand what's happening? Well, you know, for those of you who are too lazy to read a book, why don't you watch a film? You know, because it seems that if you're not reading, so start watching some movies like THX 1138. Rollerball, not the remake. The remake is crapola. Look at the original, and you'll see exactly where this is going. I mean, 1984. All of this has been laid out, which just goes to show you how much, you know, in terms of cultural studies, that the films really don't influence anything but the consumer market. Because, you know, here it is, you have films that have been showing you chapter and verse how this is going to go, and you still go for it. You know, you get turned on by watching all the military stuff, you know. I mean, I heard that they had this last American Idol here on an aircraft carrier. I mean, you're being, I don't want to be rude, but I mean, you're being slapped in the face with something that's really not too cool. And you're loving it. You're loving it. You know, everything that you say you're against, this is what you're doing. And I'm talking to you, average white American, because, you know, my native brothers and sisters and listeners, you know, we already understand the deal, because we live with this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from the second that we come out of our womb, of our mother's womb, up until the day that we die, man. You know, we have to deal with the fact that we are forced to live under your rules, your world, your, you know, idiosyncrasies, your insecurities, your fears, your nightmares, you know, all of your little petty, you know, things that get you going. All of it. you know, we have to deal with it. We have to coddle it and what have you. And, you know, we're not the ones with the problem. You are, because, you know, while at the same time, and this goes for liberals too, you know, you make it very clear that, you know, without Greece and what have you, you know, there'd be no what we have today, right? You know, the African has done nothing. You know, the native has done nothing. The Asian has done nothing, you know. The Arab has done nothing. You know, even though Europe wouldn't have any consciousness of Plato or Socrates if it wasn't for Arabs who documented all of this, because the average European couldn't read or write. But, you know, hey, you know, that doesn't matter, right? That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that the Mayan civilization was completely destroyed by the Spanish. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, as Lula said, you know, if you're going to hold that rhetoric, as Gingrich does, you know, American exceptionalism, as Ron Paul does, that there's only Europocentrism and nothing else counts, right? There's only the white man, and then there's everybody else, right? The white man's burden. Okay, so if we're going to do that, let's all deal with what Lula put down, and let's, you know, argue the fact, which we don't have to argue, because it is a fact that if the white man says that he did everything and is incontrovertible, well, then fine, then you're responsible for everything that's gone wrong. And, you know, I don't support Obama politically, you know, and I don't support him, you know, but at the same time, they're not insulting him because of his politics. They're insulting him because they would have done the same goddamn thing. They would have bailed out all of those banks and ripped off the taxpayers to do so. But they would have tried to rip off only the non-white taxpayers who don't have anything anyway. So, you know, they would have cut us at the kneecaps. You know, that's the only difference between the two. In the case of Obama, he took from everybody to pay his taxes because he had to, right? And then he went after Bernie Madoff because, well, you know, they had to get somebody, and they, you know, there was Abramoff. You know, they had to have somebody as a symbol, and once they did that, you know, it went back to being business as usual. So when you listen to Romney talk about economics, just ignore him, because he's going to say a whole lot of things, but that doesn't mean you have to listen. Romney is a hypocrite. He has so much money in offshore accounts, it came out this morning, that is not funny. The Cayman Islands, I mean, there's a long list. So, you know, ignore him. He's never worked a day in his life. Ignore him. He was born rich. You know, as long as he will be around, he will be rich. So ignore him. You know, he made $46 million or something and paid 14% in taxes. Some are saying 13 and change. So ignore him. Same thing with Gingrich. He was taking money from Fannie Mae, who did all of this to us. You know, you want to talk about racism, he wants to, you know, to use cold terms for black folks. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, what have you, he's working for them, and they're doing the subprime thing and cheating people left and right. He's a hypocrite. Don't say anything. I mean, he's got a charge account at Tiffany's. He's a serial adulterer who's a hypocrite. I mean, you know, I don't care what politicians do in their private lives, and it shouldn't matter to any of us. It's what they do in office. But in the case of Gingrich, he made it a point to push the GOP to go after Bill Clinton when he was having the Lewinsky thing go down. He pushed them to make that their number one priority. He demanded, and we're talking about someone who ended up getting kicked out of the Congress. I mean, are people forgetting this, that Gingrich was kicked out of the Congress, that he was fined for ethics violations, that his whole Republican Revolution thing was a sham, and that he was getting all kinds of punk for his county in Georgia, was it Cobb County down there? You know, have people forgotten what type of Republican he is? I mean, you notice that not one Republican talks about Tom DeLay any longer. Nobody talks about the hammer any longer, you know. The Republican who defended, you know, the abuse of women in the Marianas Islands or Marshall Islands or what have you. You know, well, you know, one of these offshore things when it says made in U.S. and it's not. It's made with slave labor in one of these protectorates. Because, you know, they don't want to call them colonies, right? So, you know, they're protectorates. You know, because the United States doesn't have colonies. You know, Puerto Rico and Guam are not colonies. You know, they're protectorates. You know, so it's nonsense. And again, you know, the black community, you're sleeping, because you're expecting Barack Obama to say something, and he's not going to say anything. You know, you got people calling him tar baby, and he hasn't said anything. He's blaming you, remember? Yeah, he's not sounding any different than Gingrich. This is why Gingrich is full of it. He's full of it. The last time Barack Obama spoke to the black community, what did he do? He blamed you. He said you're not working hard enough. Remember doing his great and much lauded by the white liberals in this country on race speech of 2008? He blamed you. He blamed all of the black activists that got you what little bit that you do have now for making white people angry. Remember, he excused the racism of his grandmother. He excused and apologized. Well, not apologized in the real sense, apologia in the classic sense, for how white people feel towards black folks. And if you didn't understand that because you were so blinded by his beautiful blackness, you're a sucker. Because he's not doing anything for you. Ask the black farmers. Ask Shirley Sherrod what he did for her. Ask those folks over at Acorn what he did for them when it was, you know, found that James O'Keefe and his little merry band of pranksters totally falsified all that information and got the Congress to turn against them and everything else, and still having Tea Party people believe that they were behind some kind of nefarious plot to get, you know, people who didn't deserve, quote unquote, to be registered to vote for Obama. And here you have when Santorum now turns out wins this, what was it, Iowa? Because there were all these false people who were on the register. And black people were not allowed to even vote in certain places in 2000 and 2004. And you're sleeping because you're waiting for him to say something. He's not going to say anything. He hasn't said anything so far. He hasn't said anything when his wife has been called a gorilla. He hasn't said anything when his children have been insulted. He hasn't said anything when his entire goddamn race has been insulted. So you're an idiot if you really think that somehow he's got some kind of master plan where he's just going to turn everything over. No, he's not. He's turned everything over, right? He's turned it over to the rich. And just because a few of them are brown, and I mean literally a few of them are brown, doesn't mean anything, because you're not going to get anything out of it. You know, you're more worried about how cool it was. You think it was cool for Jay-Z and Beyonce to close off an entire wing of a hospital and deny other people health care. Some of those people were critical, actually, that they were denying health care to, because they had, you know, totally commandeered this entire area of a goddamn hospital. And had, you know, all this security, you know, everything you see in the movies, you know, all of this nonsense, paparazzi, all of this nonsense. Who the hell do they think they are? You know, you got black people out here starving and suffering. You got Troy Davis died, man, turned himself in to the authorities because he knew that he didn't do anything wrong, and they killed him. Even after somebody else admitted to the damn thing, and seven of the nine witnesses recanted their stories because they said they were told to say those things under pressure, as if that doesn't happen. Because we have a video now of a young brother, a young black couple, who was stopped for something, but the dash cam, because the officer didn't realize that the dash cam was on him, showing him take out a bag of marijuana and plant it on these two people. But no, you're going to sit here and say that there's nothing for us to worry about, right? You're sleeping. You're sleeping. You 85s, I have no respect for you no more. Because here it is, the most blatant thing. You're worried about the gays, right? The gays are not doing this to you. The gays are not the ones that are framing you by planting dope on you to get a false conviction. They're not the ones that are locking you out of your jobs. They're not the ones that are denying you services when you go to ask for what you've been paying for in taxes. They're not the ones calling your mama and your wife welfare queens. See, you get caught up into the stuff that they tell you to get hooked up on. We got a lot of black preachers here that are making a lot of money selling DVDs and CDs and, you know, books and what have you by, you know, knocking the gay community. As if there's no gay people in the African community. Which is patently ridiculous. I know you don't want to talk about James Baldwin. And I know you'll talk about Elin Harris, maybe. And the only reason why you like the Madea person because I really don't even want to mention, I don't even want to mention his name, you know, because he, right, because it gets into beef,
right?
But no, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, weakness, but see, as long as he talks about God and keeps it within a certain context, you know, like doing hair, you can be accepted by some black women, a few brothers, and a handful of capitalists. But if you're like James Baldwin and you live your life, well, gee, then there's a problem. If you're a sports, was it John DeMaccia? I'm not, because I'm not into sports, but whatever his name was, the brother who came out, you know, who talks about him anymore, really? You know, we you know, what we focus on has a lot to do with where our head is at, and we're focusing on, you know, things that don't have anything to do with our daily living. Nothing to do with our daily living. You know, these sisters, and now it's spread to Africa, who are straightening their hair. You know, you will miss a meal or eat McDonald's rather than have a healthy meal to make sure that your hair looks like something that it naturally isn't. You know, but you call somebody stupid because, and you know what I'm talking about, you'll call someone stupid because they want to talk about a real issue. Who wants to talk about that? You know, there's other things out here, you know. I like to think about what's good in life. Why can't I just be happy? Why can't we all just be happy? Well, see, this is hypocritical because they'll turn right around and tell their husband, get out there and bust your ass to match for some grass because this needs to be paid, that needs to be paid, this needs to be paid. Just go out there and get it, right? Not understanding what he has to do to go out there to get it. And what he has to go through to go out there to get it. He's got to go through people like Jenrich, who think they're doing work for God by denying him a job. And don't think that when, you know, brothers go, no matter what their background, when they apply for work, that they're getting fair treatment, because they're not. There's been study after study after study after study by several goddamn universities in this country over a 40-year period that said no matter what the educational background, no matter the lack of a criminal background, no matter what you do, no matter how clean cut they are simply not being hired. On the other hand, you can have a white guy that has been in and out of the joint, right? You know, he can have absolutely no education, lie about his education, and still get interviews, and in many cases, get hired. This is a documented fact. Don't believe me. Don't believe me. Find out if I'm correct or not. See if I'm wrong. Go out there, have the courage to look it up. You know, all of the people of color that are hooked up on the net, you know, I mean, if you're listening to the show, obviously you're on the internet. And I'm saying the same thing to white folks too. You know, don't believe me. If you really think that racism is over, go out there and look. And stop looking at these things as little separated incidents that don't have any connection to anything, but then you'll connect every statement that's made about the state of Israel in regards to the indigenous Palestinian population and associate that with Judeophobia when there is no association with Judeophobia. And why is this? Well, let's use a historical reference. During World War II, you had Germans that were captured and brought to the United States and held in POW camps in the Midwest. Now, one quarter of the American population that is Euro-American is of German descent. There's always been a large German population here. Matter of fact, the United States almost spoke German. The only reason that they didn't, to totally separate themselves culturally from England, the only reason they didn't was because they said they'd have to retrain all of the Anglos to speak German, and it wasn't worth it at the time because they needed to, you know, build a country, whatever, so it was abandoned. But it was seriously discussed. That's how many Germans are here. So, you know, they brought them into the Midwest, and, you know, they put them in, you can go see the films, the government films. They're all declassified. They've been in several documentaries that can be found on cable if you watch these history channels on how well these men were treated. Now, black men who were serving in uniform, truck drivers, black truck drivers going through these towns, couldn't even stop to get a bite to eat. These Nazis, they were able to grow hops and able to sell their hops to the local pubs in the towns for profit, and they kept the profit. They had access to prostitutes. I mean, you know, they were not kept in POW conditions. And why was this possible? Well, because you have one white man who's looking at another white man and sees kinship. You know, and as much as we want to deny it here, the average white person, especially these conservative knuckle draggers, when they see Obama, no matter what, he's half European, what have you, it doesn't matter. You know, Kansas slave owners, I mean, that's what he comes from. Remember, he just shrugged it off that he comes from a family of slave owners. He just shrugged it off. You know, he represents white America more than he represents black America. He really doesn't have anything to do with us. But when they see him, doesn't matter. He's black. It doesn't matter. You know, that's the be all and end all of everything. You know, as Jefferson said, the unremovable veil of blackness. But you black folks are still sleeping. You white folks too, who think that this doesn't affect you, that you think that your life will be the same. You know, okay. Ask the average German today if their life is the same. They still deal with this. And because it is split, right, you know, when they had the wall up, you had what was developing in Eastern Germany. But see, the thing about it is, they were using Nazis and fascists underground to undermine what they were doing in Eastern Germany. So the Stasi, their intelligence service, you know, I mean, they were particularly cruel to Nazis. But it didn't mean that the Nazis didn't exist, because the West was still using them. Read any book about what was going on, you know, the cat and mouse behind the scenes thing during World War II, and what happened after World War II. And yeah, there's Operation Gladio so far, and that's real. And that takes a lot of, you know, in-depth research. But really look and see what was going on in Eastern Germany. Because when the wall came down, all those Nazis filtered to the West. And look what's happening today. Today. You know, not 20 years ago. Today. You know. It's out of hand. I mean, here you have Anders Breivik, and you would think that nothing. You know, I mean, how many things have happened, you know, with these fools that are inspired by Glenn Beck and what have you. You know, what goes on here? You had Eric Rudolph, who was a nut. You had Timothy McVeigh, John Nichols, who supposedly that was part of a larger conspiracy. All Christians, all right-wingers. You know, but they look, you know, I mean, what, the fool that attacked the Jewish museum in D.C. and killed the African security guard, the Jewish community doesn't talk about that, right? Matter of fact, have you guys read the Atlanta Jewish Times lately? I'm not even going to get into it. I just want you to go look at it. The Atlanta Jewish Times. And go see what they had to say about the current state of affairs. Because, you know, they are so adamant on defending Israel, they are literally willing to openly discuss anything. And if you'll notice, they haven't had their site pulled down, and as far as I know, they're still selling newspapers. So you think about that. This is the Angry Indian, and you are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
We were called the elite now, if that can help you, by the main paper of the United States, the New York Times, so that Garvey had evolved an elitist group. I didn't have to do as other children did, to say that, well, I was a Negro, and so I was at the bottom of the barrel. We used the term Negro in the organization because that's what Mr. Garvey had to use, because he was, remember, not a naturalized citizen of the country. So he used the term Negro, but we ourselves at home knew we were black, we were African, and that made it so different for us. Made it, just as I said, perfect. I loved my life as a child. It was a good life. We had our own God. We didn't have a white God. We had our African fundamentalism that we grew up under. Mr. Garvey told us who we were, that the Sphinx, the pyramids were all ours, that the ancient kings, that the African kings were in the Bible. He showed us and pointed them out to us. He gave us black angels. Now, this was unusual, and some people were rather worried. The woman was glorified in the family. She was the mother who taught, and above her, she was protected by the Almighty. The Jesus child looked like us. So therefore, to explain my childhood, I would have to say I was as perfect as maybe any white child in the United States could be. This was our standard. The red, black, and the green. This is the original one that Mr. Garvey himself would have held. The red for one blood of black men all over the world. Black meaning the black peoples of the world wherever we were. And green for Mother Africa.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fusebox Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com. You're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right? Peace.
AngryIndianRadio.blogspot.com.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And the Democrats are throwing the election away. For what? An inadequate black male who would not have been running had it not been a white woman that was running for president. I'm no second-class citizen. And goddamn the Democrats.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
Go ahead, ready?
I'm Forrest Whitaker for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is my daughter, True.
Hi.
Life is full of choices, and many years ago, I chose to become a vegetarian, and it's one of the best choices I've ever made. And since True's dad was a vegetarian, she decided to be vegetarian too. You may decide to go vegetarian for better health, for a better environment, or you could be like True and I and just decide you don't want to eat meat anymore.
I love animals and I love being a vegetarian.
I'm Forrest Whitaker.
And I'm True Whitaker.
And we're vegetarians.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell him to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Hey music lovers, this is Finian McKay and you're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast. Rock and roll forever.
ಬರುತ್ತಿದೆ ಎಲ್ಲಡೆ ಭೀಕರವಾಗಿ ಏಡ್ಸು ಏಡ್ಸು ಏಡ್ಸೋ ನಮ್ಮ ವೈರಿಗೂ ಬಾರದಿರಲಿ ಅದು ಓಡ್ಸು ಓಡ್ಸು ಓಡ್ಸೋ.
ಹೆಚ್ಚಿನ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಪರ್ಕದ ಸೋಂಕುಗಳು ವಾಸಿಯಾಗುತ್ತವೆ, ಆದರೆ ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆ ಇಲ್ಲ.
ಏಡ್ಸ್ಗೆ ತುತ್ತಾಗಿರುವ ವ್ಯಕ್ತಿಗಳಿಗೆ ನಿಮ್ಮಿಂದ ಬೇಕಾಗಿರುವುದು ಭೇದ ಭಾವ ಉಪೇಕ್ಷೆಯಲ್ಲ, ಅವರಿಗೆ ಅಗತ್ಯವಿರುವುದು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಪ್ರೀತಿ, ಅನುಕಂಪ ಮತ್ತು ಬೆಂಬಲ.
ಕಾಂಡಮ್ ಅಥವಾ ನಿರೋಧ ಬಳಕೆ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ಸಂಗಾತಿಗಳ ಸಂಖ್ಯೆ ಹೆಚ್ಚಷ್ಟು ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯವೂ ಹೆಚ್ಚುತ್ತದೆ. ಒಂದು ಪಕ್ಷ ನಿಮಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ಇದೆ ಎಂದು ಗೊತ್ತಾದರೆ ನಿಮ್ಮ ಆರೋಗ್ಯವನ್ನು ಕಾಪಾಡಿಕೊಂಡು ಹೋಗಲು ನಿಮಗೆ ಮತ್ತು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಕುಟುಂಬದವರಿಗೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಪ್ರೇರಿತ ಸಮಾಲೋಚನೆ ಮತ್ತು ಪರೀಕ್ಷಾ ಕೇಂದ್ರದವರು ಸಹಾಯ ಮಾಡುವರು.
ಚಿಕಿತ್ಸೆಗೊಳಗಾಗದ ಲೈಂಗಿಕ ರೋಗಗಳಾದ ಯೋನಿಯ ಸ್ರಾವ ಮತ್ತು ಗಾಯ, ಹುಣ್ಣು, ಕಿಬ್ಬೊಟ್ಟೆಯಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವು ಮತ್ತು ಸಂಭೋಗದ ಸಮಯದಲ್ಲಿ ನೋವುವಿರುವ ಸ್ತ್ರೀಯರಿಗೆ ಎಚ್ಐವಿ ಸೋಂಕು ತಗುಲುವ ಅಪಾಯ ಹೆಚ್ಚು.
ಏಡ್ಸ್ ಬಾರದಂತೆ ತಡೆಗಟ್ಟಲು ನೀವು ನಿಮ್ಮ ಸಂಗಾತಿ ಇಬ್ಬರಲ್ಲೂ ಪರಸ್ಪರ ವಿಶ್ವಾಸ, ಪ್ರೀತಿ, ನಿಷ್ಠೆ ಇರಲಿ. ನಿಮ್ಮದು ಏಕಪತಿ ಮತ್ತು ಏಕಪತ್ನಿತ್ವ ಸಂಬಂಧವಾಗಿರಲಿ.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
This is Howard Zinn. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced false news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Uzuru and Osio, this is Charles Fiddler. I'm listening to Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
There are some dark pages in the history of the white man's dealings with the Indian, and many parts of the record are stained with the greed and avarice of those who have thought only of their own profit. But it is also true that the purposes and motives of this great government and of our nation as a whole toward the red men have been wise, just, and beneficent. The remarkable progress of our Indian brothers toward civilization is proof of it, and open to all to see. During the past half century, you have seen the schoolhouse take the place of the military post on your reservations. The administration of Indian affairs has been transferred from the military to the civil arm of the government. The education and industrial training the government has given you has enabled thousands of Indian men and women to take their places in civilization alongside their white neighbors. Thousands are living in substantial farmhouses on their own separate allotments of land. Hundreds of others have won places of prominence in the professions, and some have worked their way into the halls of Congress and into places of responsibility in our state and national governments. 30,000 Indian children are enrolled in government, state, and mission schools. The great white father now calls you his brothers, not his children. Because you have shown in your education and in your settled ways of life staunch, manly, worthy qualities of sound character.
Thank you.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. aboriginalpress.blogspot.com.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
After buying a ticket, boarding a plane, and arriving at your destination, the normal expectation is you'll be able to leave the airport. When David Barsamian arrived in New Delhi Airport September 23rd, that was his expectation. Unfortunately, things weren't normal. To pick up the story, I'm joined on the phone by David Barsamian. We reached him at his home in Colorado. He's the creator of Alternative Radio, whose interviews and recordings are frequently broadcast on Red Eye and other programs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Welcome back to Red Eye, David.
Always a pleasure to be on Red Eye and my very favorite radio station in Vancouver.
So pick up the thread and tell us what happened on your arrival at New Delhi Airport once your plane had landed.
Well, I've been traveling to India since 1966. I first went there when I was 21 years old, and I had a valid visa. I had recently been in India as recently as this past February, and there was no hint of any kind of difficulty or a problem. And I arrive at Indira Gandhi International Airport. I'm asked to wait. Immigration officials come over to me and say, come with us. That's the last words, you know, those are the last words anyone wants to hear at any airport, you know, including Vancouver. And I was put in a room, and very quickly, to compress a lot of time here, I was told that I'm going back on the same Lufthansa flight that I arrived on. When I asked why, a piece of paper was waved in my face. I could see that it was an order from the government of India with my name on it. I could see the word banned. It was very prominent, and the Lufthansa flight. And I was promptly put back on the very same plane. Not only was it a deeply humiliating and shocking experience, but a very expensive one. You get to pay for your own deportation. They took my return ticket, went to the Lufthansa counter and said, you know, he's going back, not allowed entry into India. And that's what happened. And to this date, I have had no official explanation from the government of India, even though numerous people have contacted the government, including independent journalists. A petition has been submitted to the Ministry of Home Affairs, which is in charge of immigration. A petition signed by such luminaries as Arundhati Roy, Vandana Shiva, Aruna Roy, Sanjay Kak, Rumila Thapar, Amit Bhaduri, literally a who's who of, I would say, the intellectual left artists and writers in India.
So you've never been deported from India. I understand you've never been deported from any other country, for that matter. They don't give you an official reason. What do you speculate as to their banning you from coming into India?
Well, again, without any kind of official acknowledgement, the speculation is quite heavy. That it has to do with my reporting on Kashmir, my uncovering of numerous atrocities there, including most recently mass graves all over the Kashmir Valley. Some 8,000 to 10,000 Kashmiris have gone missing in the largest number of custodial deaths in the world. And many of these bodies now are turning up in unmarked graves all over Kashmir. That's number one. Anything to do with Kashmir makes the Indian government just go ballistic and berserk. Very much like any discussion of Tibet makes the Chinese government completely irrational and very punitive in its responses. The other thing is I've been covering the multiple uprisings in central and eastern India, in Jharkhand, in Chhattisgarh, in Orissa, in Andhra Pradesh, and I was scheduled to meet the very prominent human rights activist and medical doctor, Dr. Binayak Sen, on October 2nd, which is ironically Gandhi's birthday. And the Indian government knew that, and I think they wanted to prevent that meeting and any attention being paid to Dr. Binayak Sen.
So have other people been banned from Kashmir? The Indian Army has some 60 to 70,000 troops.
No, you're missing one digit there. 600 to 700,000 troops. It is the most densely occupied zone in the world. Yes, Indian nationals have been prevented from entering Kashmir themselves. A well-known journalist and human rights activist, Gautam Nolaka, was turned back at Srinagar Airport. Earlier in September of this year, a few weeks before I was prevented from denied entry into India, a well-known human rights activist from the Philippines tried to get into India. She was denied entry. Last year, an American academic, Richard Shapiro, was also denied entry. So clearly, India is trying to control the narrative. It's trying to dominate the message that, you know, everything is just hunky-dory in Kashmir. You know, there are a few problems here and there, but we can solve it, completely obfuscating and masking over the 70,000-plus Kashmiris who have been killed since 1989, since the uprising began. The many missing, the many wounded, the many traumatized. There's a phenomenon in Kashmir called half widows. That is to say, numerous women, mothers, wives, cannot collect or be eligible for any kind of government assistance because their husbands have gone missing and they cannot prove death. And so they're called half widows. They're in this legal limbo land. It's a very tragic situation.
Yeah, you talk about India pretending that things are honky-dory in Kashmir. I understand they were trying to organize a major literary festival there to cover up. It's a bit like the Israeli cultural disguise of their occupation through sending their performers around the world and inviting artists to come and perform in Israel.
Well, I know for a fact that Basharat Peer, who is a friend of mine and I was going to interview, he's the author of Curfewed Night, he denounced this manipulation of writers and artists in Kashmir, and he refused to participate in this so-called literary festival. But that, again, is as you point out, it's typical of states to try and gloss over their atrocities with music concerts and poetry symposia and literary festivals.
Aaron Duddy Roy has written about your deportation. You mentioned her name and Vandana Shiva and many other prominent progressive activists in India denouncing your deportation. Is there any action that's going on outside of India that could be helpful?
Well, thank you for asking. I think if people would have to write to the Indian embassy in Washington, D.C., and just pose the question, you know, why can't David Barsamyan of Alternative Radio, an independent journalist, you know, why can't he travel freely to India? That would be very helpful. Embassy of India, Washington, D.C., you could direct it to the ambassador. I believe her name is Rao, R-A-O, Rao, Mrs. Rao.
Okay, thank you for that, and we'll refer people to that. One other thing, the Indian government, according to Arundhati Roy, is very much demanding security clearances for people who come to conferences. I don't know about journalists, but certainly if you go to an academic conference, not if you're investing in India as a corporate mogul, but if you're coming to a conference, you have to get approval of various levels of government and three arms of Indian state security. Was there any reference at all to that you hadn't satisfied these kind of arbitrary...
None whatsoever. And as I said, I was there in February, and I received no indication from the government of India that I was on any kind of list. Certainly, if such a list exists, and I believe it does, then it should have been sent to Lufthansa in Denver, and they would not have allowed me to board the flight. And I would not have gone through the financial and emotional loss that I experienced. Now, I've been talking to a couple of journalists recently. Yesterday, in fact, the Committee to Protect Journalists in New York has taken an interest in my case, and the woman I was talking to said she had applied for a journalism visa, and she's now, 4 months later, still waiting for that visa. Another journalist I spoke to, a woman in San Francisco who covered, wrote about my case, said she waited 2 years for a journalism visa. She finally gave up and went on a tourist visa. The constrictions and restraints on getting an official journalism visa to India are so cumbersome and are so difficult to satisfy that almost every journalist I know goes to India on a tourist visa.
Well, thanks for taking time this morning to inform us of this arbitrary and indefensible deportation, and we'll hope that some pressure can be brought to bear on the Indian government. Thank you, David.
I hope so, too, and people can go to alternativeradio.org, alternativeradio.org for more information. Thanks so much for having me on Red Eye.
I've been speaking with David Barsamian. He's creator of Alternative Radio. It regularly produces intensive interviews and records incisive talks of prominent independent critical thinkers. Alternative recordings are broadcast on 125 radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and Europe, and Vancouver Cooperative Radio, including Red Eye Program, is proudly one of these. If you want to go to more information on David Barsamian's deportation, go to alternativeradio.org.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Welcome to Vision on TV. We're here in London at the Rebellious Media Conference. I'm Kate Fairfax, and I'm speaking today with someone who doesn't require a great deal of introduction, John Pilger. Welcome. Thank you for speaking to us. You've recently completed a documentary, The War You Don't See, last year. Mm-hmm. And today you've just come from a War in the Media session. Mm-hmm. Quite a few interesting things were said there, so I'd like to ask you a question straight off. Your colleague in the session, Mark Curtis, was saying that media has a very major role to play in spreading disinformation and deception. Mm-hmm. Could you just say a little bit about how that happens?
It happens mainly because the media say they report wars, but in fact they promote wars. Mm-hmm. It's almost a role. It's not a sinister. It's a sinister for us watching it, but that's their job, in a sense, as being as an extension of media. The media isn't independent of great power. It isn't independent of governments in free societies. It's an extension of it. So when the elite in free societies, so-called free societies, is challenged, the media comes to its aid. So the challenge being a war, particularly an unpopular war. So the media's role is really beating the drums of that war, giving it a certain legitimacy.
How do you think those drums are beaten? Because in your session you specifically mentioned the role of journalists and you referred to embedded journalists.
By leaving things out.
Omissions,
censorship by omission. It's the most virulent form of censorship. For instance, we now have the invasion, occupation, whatever you want to call it, of Libya. And I mentioned that today a city near Tripoli, Sirte, is being bombed around the clock by NATO using fragmentation bombs and Hellfire missiles and so on. There is virtually no sense, we have virtually no sense of what that city is going through, in the same way that we had no sense of, say, how people suffered in the city of Fallujah in Iraq. We have no sense, really, of how people in village after village in Afghanistan suffer when they're attacked at night. So what I'm saying is that we get no understanding from the media of the sheer scale of civilian suffering, and civilians are in effect the enemy.
You talked about the scale of it as being the story of modern war that is not told.
Yeah, it's the scale of civilian suffering. I mean, in the First World War, the great majority were soldiers. They blew each other to bits. The Second World War, it came down. Vietnam, civilian deaths became... When the majority of casualties were civilians. After that, Iraq, something like 90%. In Afghanistan, the majority. So these are wars against civilians. Now, yes, we get stories of individual civilian suffering and casualties, but they're seen as blunders and mistakes and isolated. We rarely get a sense, for example, in Iraq, if you take the John Hopkins survey of civilian casualties, that now equals, if not passes, the number of deaths, the Fordham University estimate of the deaths in Rwanda. So more than 1 million people. It's understand that a terrible thing happened in Rwanda, but in understanding what we did in Iraq, we have no sense of that.
And you were also discussing when journalists actually take a role to promote or amplify deception rather than interrogating it. You gave an example from the US.
Yes. In my film, I interviewed Dan Rather, who is the most famous anchor for many years, CBS anchor, CBS News. And he said that, in his view, that had journalists in the United States, where the media is especially powerful because it enjoys this huge freedom, constitutional freedom, had they done their job, had they challenged and investigated and exposed the lies that led up to the invasion of Iraq instead of amplifying and echoing them, then in his view, that invasion would not have happened.
So what about the idea that journalists are complicit in war crimes? Is that your view?
Well, that's what he's saying. That's the implication of what he said. And in my film, there's David Rose of The Observer, who was responsible for some of the most impressive disinformation. And Rose said that he was lied to. The Observer published a lot of material from Rose, given to him through CIA-inspired sources, that there were weapons of mass destruction, and there were not. Rose now says that it's this kind of it's this kind of journalism that does qualify journalists to have blood on their hands. Yes.
Should they be prosecuted?
I don't know about. Yes, of course, crimes are crimes. They should be prosecuted, but there is no mechanism for prosecuting. We don't prosecute Westerners unless they're Milosevic and one or two official demons. We prosecute mainly, we prosecute peoples from the Balkans, or we prosecute people from Africa. But the greatest war criminals, of course, are within our own midst, our own leaders, just in the sheer numbers of people that have been killed or have suffered or have been dispossessed by the actions of people like Blair.
Thinking about documentary in general, it's becoming easier to make and it's becoming more popular as a form for general viewing. Do you think that that's diluting its impact or increasing its impact as a form of radical media?
I don't think... I mean, there are some very interesting documentaries around, but documentaries in holding up a mirror to our societies in terms of the wars that Western societies, Western governments start and wage, That's highly unusual. Hmm. So as we're speaking about war, I would say the number of documentaries that really analyze war from a truthful basis are very, very few.
Yes.
Very few. This is a great shame because there are good documentary makers, and the documentary is probably the most vibrant, informative device for most people.
Mm.
It's a visual essay. It helps them make sense of the news, helps them make sense of the world. They have a right to know about the perhaps the great unsaid, the great unmentionable, that we in powerful countries, in Britain and particularly the United States, are responsible for mayhem and suffering throughout the world as part of policy.
What about your own documentaries? How have the communities that you portrayed and you've given voice to, how have they reacted to your films?
Well, say if you take the Chagos Islanders, I made a film called Stealing a Nation, which was about the expulsion of the people of the Chagos Islands, Diego Garcia and others, by the British in the 1960s, so that the Americans could build a base there. That film has been used relentlessly by the community, the same with Death of a Nation, which was about East Timor. That was taken to the United Nations and all over the world by the Timorese. I didn't realize at first. I've always made my films for most people, so that to give most people a sense of what I'm trying to say in those documentaries. But in recent years, I have become aware that the documentaries are also being made for the communities that I'm filming as well.
Just on WikiLeaks, you mentioned today, it's causing panic to mainstream media. Why is that?
Well, it's blowing a whistle. It's bypassing the gatekeepers, and it's shaming so much of mainstream journalism, which, for you know, most of it takes power, great power, at its word, at face value. WikiLeaks shows us how power thinks, how it what it says, the truth it's tell, the truth it speaks in private, and the lies it tells in public.
Yes.
So it's a very, very straightforward form of journalism.
Roger, we need to evac this child. She's got a wound in the belly.
Hey, I need to get the brass to drop ramps. I got a wounded girl. We need to take the rest of mine.
It's their fault for bringing their kids to a battle.
That's right.
And that's why it's upset so much of the mainstream media. It's shaming.
As have you. Thank you so much, John Pilger. It's been a privilege. You've been watching Vision on TV.
This is Radio Anglo-Indian. Anglo-Indian radio for the Fourth World.
John T. Williams was a member of the New Chanulth Dittidot First Nations people on Vancouver Island. He carved traditional Northwest Coast totem poles. Michael Tremarco remembers Williams as a man who took pride in his craft.
I had a wood shop on Capitol Hill and used to see him now and again. I'd save pieces of wood to bring to him. I respected what he did. He embraced his culture and made a living with it, and that was really important.
Williams used to sell his handmade wares to tourists who came in from cruise ships at Pike Place Market.
It was great when he sold one to you. He wouldn't just sell it to you and walk away and go get a bottle. He'd sit and tell you what every figure was and tell you the legends behind them and tell you everything that was in this totem pole and the whole story. And it was really, it was more than just, oh, this is something that, you know, I'm the red man, I could carve a totem pole, now give me money for it. It was, I know what this is, and this is real, and you're not taking it unless you know what it is.
John T. Williams was carving a piece of wood when he was fatally shot by Seattle police officer Ian Burke the afternoon of August 31st in downtown Seattle. According to witnesses, Officer Burke saw Williams with a knife and repeatedly ordered him to drop it before shooting Williams four times from a distance of 9 feet. But according to Williams's friends, he was deaf in his left ear and may not have heard the officer's commands. Williams also struggled with a long history of homelessness and alcoholism and was living at 1811 Eastlake, a long-term home for recovering alcoholics, at the time of his death. At a speak-out on Tuesday night, organized by the Anti-Police Brutality Group October 22nd Coalition, people who knew John T. Williams insisted that despite his condition, he was not a violent person.
Hi, my name is Trina R. Thornton, and John T. was my uncle. He was very loving, kind, and never disrespectful to anybody. If you needed money, or if you needed food, or if you needed clothes, or even a place to live, he would have helped you, not hurt you, not kill you, not beat you or destroy you. That's the type my uncle was. You know, and I take this murder very hard for my family, for my friends, for my loved ones, because of the fact this wasn't just my uncle. He was my best friend. And when they killed him over a 3-inch knife and while he was carving his wood.
According to the law, it is legal to carry a 3-inch blade in the state of Washington. After getting conflicting reports, the Seattle Police Department said they now don't know if Williams had advanced towards the officer with a knife as police originally reported. Ashika, who declined to give her last name, is training to become a social worker. She did not know John Williams, but decided to attend the speak out on Tuesday.
This incident affects me directly because as a person of color, I could be impacted the same way as John T. Williams. Anyone could be impacted. It doesn't matter your race or your religion or your nationality. What you're perceived as by them is really going to impact how they treat you. And the Seattle Police Department needs to know that they've lost our trust and they need to work to rebuild it.
Community leaders from the NAACP, the Seattle Human Rights Commission, the Chief Seattle Club, and representatives of Native American groups from all over Washington have expressed serious concerns about accountability and de-escalation tactics within the Seattle Police Department. Yesterday evening, Seattle Police Chief John Diaz spoke with members of the Native American community and promised a complete and transparent investigation of the shooting. And in the meantime, those affected by the life and death of John T. Williams, like Gil Crow of the Paiute people in Nevada, placed flowers and cards at a makeshift memorial at the corner of Boren and Howell, where he was shot.
John was a very nice person, had a good, strong spirit. And would always share the recognition. He would always give someone a nod. He was a very quiet guy, a quiet spirit man, very humble, working with his carving. I used to walk by him, and he would share a nod, and I would nod back as a recognition. And he was a good brother. I didn't know him, but just his presence was always pleasant to see early in the morning.
For One World Report, I'm Amber Cortez.
Occupy Oakland!
Whether you felt
You also win!
Oakland!
Decolonize Oakland!
Decolonize Oakland!
Decolonize Oakland!
Decolonize Oakland!
Decolonize Oakland!
You have been listening to Angrindian Radio. AngrindianRadio.blogspot.com.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The Anti-Colonial Cure for Mental Slavery.